Welcome to the Survival Podcast for people who take movies too seriously.
We survived the apocalypse, so you don't have to.
I'm Johnny.
And I'm Shane. Hey, Johnny.
Yeah?
Pull my finger.
I knew you were going to do that.
Pull my finger. Pull my finger.
That's not bad. That's not bad, yeah. Michael Caine.
Yeah,
not many people know that. Say not many people know that.
Not many people know that. I really
that's pretty good. I wish I could do accents.
Yeah. My name's Michael Payne, and I'm a nosy neighbour. That was the last show.
Have you ever seen Michael Caine doing his Michael Caine impersonation?
No.
He's on Graham Norton, and Graham gets him to do his best Michael Caine impersonation.
That's really funny.
That's pretty good.
I like that.
So this week, of course, you've seen from the title, we are doing Children of Men, the 2004 film.
2006?
Oh, is it? I thought it was 2004. The film, anyway.
Yeah.
Based on the novel by P.D. James. And directed, of course, by... Oh, I can never pronounce his surname, but it's Alfonso Cuarón, I think, is how you pronounce it.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to pronounce it either.
A lot of people would have seen his films, whether you know it or not. Especially because he directed a Harry Potter movie. So.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
So the film actually has five screenwriters, one uncredited. So six altogether. Alfonso Cuarón is one of them. And this is the type of thing that people might like think would make him a bad filmmaker, but I kind of appreciate. Never read the book.
Yeah.
And then I wonder, did he read The Prisoner of Azkaban? It'd be so much funnier to like to adapt. What is that, like the fourth Harry Potter film?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
To be that far into a series and just not read the book you're directing.
I read that tidbit of information and I was like, really? But I get because he had a vision of how he wanted to tell the story. Like he'd read whatever version of the script and thought, okay, well, that character arc doesn't make sense. We can drop that. And, like he looks at it logically.
But that's the thing, like how writing credits work. I mean, there's four other credited writers on it. So like there was obviously, by the time he actually came on board, there had probably been like three drafts and he just done his own draft. So he was rewriting their adaption.
Yeah, and he was looking at it from like, what's the best narrative structure for a film, which I completely understand. But I'd still be curious to read the movie or to read the books. And,
yeah, it's completely different. We can get into that. Before we do get started, I do want to ask people, if you wouldn't mind throwing us an old review, do so. We usually ask at the end, but I think a lot of people don't listen to the end. Or like, you know, as soon as they hear the outro music start to play, might tune out. So if you're on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Castbox, or Podcast Addict, they all have review sections. Stitcher used to, but they don't anymore, but nobody listens to Stitcher, so it doesn't matter.
It's fair.
It's surprising to me that Google Podcasts don't have a review section.
Yeah, I would have thought so.
Or Podbean. But
yeah.
Yeah, only a handful of them do, but Amazon might actually. Check out whatever app you use. Check to see if you can review us. And do if you can. The thing is, I don't actually know how important it is on the other services. I know on Apple Podcasts, it makes a big difference.
It's very important on Apple.
Yeah, it's pretty much more important. It's like the algorithm like takes reviews, or at least star ratings. They put more importance on that than actual download numbers.
Yeah, or content type or quality.
So let's get into the film anyway.
Yeah.
So we're set in England in 2027. After an unknown catastrophe has rendered humanity infertile, or particularly women. And that's actually the first difference from the book, that it's men in the book and women in the movie.
Oh, okay.
Which is funny because like the book's written by a woman and the men are infertile. Then like five lads adapt the book and they make it and they change it around. But so it's set in 2020.
So I get in movie it being women is more dramatic, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, does it, like, it wouldn't matter, like, for the world, it wouldn't matter. They wanted to put the focus on a pregnant woman, so it made sense for them, but...
Yeah.
But anyway, but the other thing then is it's almost like a different... When you start changing those type of things, because, like, you know, we're going to change who the virus or whatever affects because we want to tell this other story that isn't in the book, then you're like, well, why not just make a different film?
Yeah, then it is just totally different than the point.
Yeah, and even, like, the thing with the name, like, the name's called... It's Children of Men, and does that name even make sense? And
I always thought of it as, like, you know, the Children of Mankind.
Well, it is, but... Yeah, but there is, like, this stuff in the book, too, where, like... Because, like, it happened with anybody. Like, the idea of an entire, like, gender becoming sort of the reason that humanity is about to exit.
Yeah.
It changes the power structure in the world.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And there's a lot of that in the book, and it's not in the film. There's a lot of stuff, like, a lot of the themes and stuff in the book just aren't in the film. And it kind of ends up just being like, oh, well, they're both just set in a like a dystopian England where there's no children. And that's where the similarities begin and end, you know?
Yeah, which is just the very basic concept of that.
Yeah. But anyway, it's set in 2027. The book's actually set in 2021, January 2021, to be specific. The first line of the book kind of begins like 1984, actually. It's written, it's Theo's journal, but the book switches between first and second person. So the first line is, early this morning, 1st of January 2021, 3 minutes after midnight, the last human being to be born on Earth was killed in a pub brawl in a suburb of Buenos Aires, aged 25 years, 2 months, and 20, or and 12 days.
Wow.
Which is just a great beginning to the book. And that's pretty much the beginning to the film, too.
Yeah,
pretty much. We just get it from news reports.
And because when the movie's made and released, then they kind of updated a little bit. So it's... came out in 2006. It's set in 2027.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's to be expected. The book was written in the 90s.
Oh no, and then the youngest person dies in like 18, not 25. Mm.
Yeah, and there is differences there too. He's it's almost treated like a Princess Diana.
Yeah.
That in the film, in the book, it's noteworthy and it's on the news, but there was no celebrity culture around him or anything.
Oh, okay.
He was just known. It was known that he was the youngest, but there was no, like, nobody hounding him for autographs or stuff like that.
Yeah, because in the movie, it's like everyone is crying and people are stunned watching the TV.
And I didn't, to be honest, that was one of the few things I really disliked with the film. I thought that was really, like... student filmy kind of idea. Nobody would give a shit.
Yeah, because
in reality, nobody things are too bad for anybody to care that much. People would be like, "Oh, that's pretty sad that even the youngest person just died." But then you just be like, "Well, now there's just another youngest person." You know, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. Nobody would care. At least I don't think so. Anyway, I think most people would act like how Theo acted in it, where he just didn't really care.
Yeah. But is that nearly... Well, no, it's not that world where, like, people are faking. Like, there's no need for that.
No, I don't.
I think the idea, what they're trying to get across in the movie, is just the fact that, like, even though, like, it's not like the youngest person could then have children, but it's just the idea being that he is, like, the last... He'd potentially be the last person ever to live. And then people put a lot of their hopes into that concept of him. And then that's what, like, it's like that hope is... gone. But even the newscasters, like, talking about, now the mantle is handed on to a woman this time, and he, like, describes their age and she's like a day older than him or something.
Yeah,
like, it's not even that much of a difference.
But what you're describing, like, I think that is why they done it, but what you're describing is what I don't buy that people would actually feel like that.
Yeah.
I don't think they'd put any sort of hope in that. I think that it's such a hopeless situation. I don't think something like that would be any sort of solace to 90% of the population, you know?
And, like, not to skip ahead, but when you match it to, there's a world where the government are giving out free suicide kits, I don't think people are going to care that much.
Yeah. But anyway, so that happens at the very beginning, and you know, we learned that Britain is home to pretty much the last functioning government and exists in a semi-authoritarian state, attracting migrants fleeing other countries that are just devastated through every, like, plague, war, everything.
Yeah.
Though it's kind of actually unclear whether how many immigrants are coming into the country, or are they just getting rid of all the ones that were already there? Is this like a worst case scenario of Brexit, you know?
There's a bit of that. I think it's kind of both. I think it's no immigrants allowed in, and then anyone who is there is not allowed to stay, you know. Because at one point, even there's Theo meets a guy and he's like, has a Northern Irish accent. He's in one of the camps. So it seems to be anyone who's not like British and is considered a fugitive or a Fuji.
That's what Jasper refers to them as, a Fuji.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the suicide kits there, so that's the practice of quietus is encouraged, but to those over 60, which is essentially just a state-sponsored program where you're sent out a kit to kill yourself if you want. In the book, it's actually more of a, it's like a, deduced like mass ceremonies.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think that's really mentioned. I think it might actually be implied in the film, but just like in the background, there's an ad for this, like, joining the ceremony or whatever.
Yeah, it's just mentioned. And then there's a scene where he's going into, I think it's when he's going to go see his cousin. Yeah, and he drives by and there's all these people in like yellow rain jackets out in the street. And I think the idea is that they were all going to do a big mass suicide together, but then you don't see it. It's literally just this group trying to preach their doctrine or whatever.
Yeah, I think that might just be more of the religious groups.
Oh, yeah, they're the ones who, like... Oh, he references that with Jasper, actually, doesn't he? He says the last girl he was dating, she converted to him. Sorry, I'm mixing that up.
Now, we should probably get to talking about introducing that character before we talk about stuff he experiences. Yeah. We're introduced to just a London in shit, where it's like they haven't updated buses since children stopped being born, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a police state, essentially. It's an Orwellian regime, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
That's another thing that's not in the book. There is a dictator, but it's more a case that, like, nobody else wanted a job.
Oh, okay.
And it's not this, there's not this, everybody's kind of just going about their business, and the Orwellian like regime, so it is there, but it's not on the surface. Basically, you learn later in the book that they are a big brother, but there's no real evidence of it the way there is in the film, where it's just like screens telling you to kill yourself and shit like that. In the book, actually, the way people are living feels more like the way people are living with coronavirus, where people are just trying to get by as things go to shit.
Yeah, yeah. But like when you think about it, if you have a world where like you're like, okay, so the human race is going to be gone in 60 to 70 years, like why would you bother buying a new car or manufacturing new buses or you wouldn't build any more buildings? And obviously, I meant to look it up actually and then I forgot. I wonder how many people die of natural causes every day in the world. You probably have stats like that. We looked at it anyway. But like, how quickly will the population actually decline? You know? And there's what, 18 years after the last person being born. Like, so it makes sense that just so many industries just collapse because nobody's interested in continuing on. You know?
Yeah, well, you see, I was thinking about that, like, how long would it take and was there any point getting statistics? And essentially, there isn't, because after 10 years, the statistics would completely change anyway, because most crime is committed by people under 30. So a lot, like, the funny thing is, a lot of older people would actually be a lot safer technically in that world, but depending on where they are, like, we people have turned into savages in this world, so they probably wouldn't be. But it does mean that our current statistics actually probably wouldn't give you any clue to what that world would be like.
So different.
Yeah. But in this sort of, this horrible version of London, we meet Theo Farran, played by Clive Owen, who's a former activist turned alcoholic, bureaucrat.
Yeah, what is it? That's another hint to 1984. He works for like something like the Ministry of something. Like it's a made-up ministry. You know the way in 1984, like they have a ministry for fucking everything.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't think what it is. I think it's the Ministry of Power or something like that. So.
Yeah, like I think they kind of lay on the 1984 stuff a bit too heavy in it.
Yeah.
But I get it. But so we're introduced to Theo Farron, and yeah, they... The first scene, there's a bomb in a cafe that he just about survives. It's even pointed out he survived because he survived actually because he's an alcoholic. Because he just got his coffee, he didn't want to put cream or sugar or anything into it, so he wanted to go outside and sneak some whiskey into it, and then the bomb blew.
That's a really good way of looking at it. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
Alcoholism saved him.
Yeah, and like so anyway, later in the film, because we've already been talking for ages now,
yeah.
And I guess this kind of goes to just how much of a hellhole London is, that Theo is kidnapped in broad daylight and nobody even turns around, and threw into a truck by a group, a sort of a rebel activist group called the Fishes, led by his ex-wife, Julian, led by Julianne Moore. And he's tasked with securing some travel papers, documents for... a refugee girl from his cousin, who is a sort of a low-ranking minister in the government.
Which still means he has loads of power.
Sorry,
he still has loads of power and stuff to the cousin. Or he just lives a very affluent life because that's the world they're in.
Yeah, yeah. I think he actually has very little power. He even says that
yeah.
He's not even sure if he has clearance to get them when they meet.
Mm.
But yeah, and that's pretty much the plot. Theo's in it for the money. He's going to be paid a couple of grand.
I love how little they're going to pay him. They're like, oh, we think we can get our hands on 5 grand for you. I was like, 5 grand? Like, Jesus.
Well, 5 grand just to get the papers isn't bad. But then he can only, later when he does get the papers, he can only get like companion papers, meaning because he has to pretend, even to his cousin, he pretends that this is his girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah.
So he has to go with her. And then they might be able to get him a couple more grand on top of that. And that's where I'm like, well, no, that's not worth it.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose.
5 grand just to get the papers, fine. But 7 to like go with her? No.
Yeah. Fuck that. Yeah, it's not worth it.
Now, and that's now another thing just to talk about the book for a second. That so none of that stuff, his ex-wife, he does have an ex-wife in the book. But she doesn't reappear, and Julian is just a stranger. He's actually quite a different character in the book too. He's an Oxford professor, and I think she was in one of his classes. She's younger, like she's in a, she's one of the last. Julian's like one of the last born in the book.
Oh, she's part of that generation, like
yeah, yeah.
Well, it's a little bit implied that the girl in Children of Men that like she is very young, like she's only like 19 or 20.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I mean, like Julianne Moore's character, I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah, no, totally.
That she is that age in the book, and and this is much better. He's cousins with the dictator of England, but also essentially stepbrothers. He was raised with him to live together, and he used to be his chief advisor.
Until
he just kind of got sick of the job and left. And now he just lives in this massive townhouse by himself. Like he's loaded in the book.
Okay, so he actually has better connections than
yeah, and he's not like a cynical alcoholic. He's actually like really what I love in the book is he has a really good life, and he's quite happy.
Yeah,
he because the thing is like his life kind of went to shit before this happened.
Yeah.
There's kind of like a tragic backstory, kind of very like the True Detective thing with Matthew McConaughey's character. He there was an accident where he caused the death of his own child.
Oh, no. Oh.
And so it's quite dark, but like now that there's this weird thing where now that everybody else
sorry,
is
I
alive.
Have to. Sorry, something wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Baby, I gotta run. Give me 2 seconds.
Yeah, yeah, no worries. Perfect timing, hey? So I can't remember where we... Well, can I leave that part in?
What, did I have to go? Yeah, go on.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, we start again.
It's just fitting that we're talking about a world without children, like people aren't having babies and you have to go to look after your baby.
My baby was crying.
Yeah, it was just good timing.
Yeah.
Especially because I was talking about like a bad thing from the novel, so it brings the mood back up.
Yeah, yeah.
This is something I thought of when you were away, though, that I forgot to mention at the start. P.D. James, the author of the book, that's her in the cafe at the beginning holding the dog beside Clive Owen.
The old lady.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's mad. Good cameo.
That's another thing, too, because she died, she was like 98 when she died or something, 94 maybe, like
yeah.
A few years ago. So I think she would have been like early 70s at best when she wrote Children of Men, which it just seems like it's not a book I'd expect a granny to be writing, you know?
I know what you mean, yeah. But does she have like a huge library of books she'd written before?
Yeah, but I think she'd mainly written like thrillers and like detective mysteries and stuff like that.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But a really like a very violent and just weird, like a very violent and like horrifying sci-fi dystopian novel. It's just, I don't know, it's just not something I'd typically expect from an old lady or an old man for that matter. Like, but
I know what you mean. It's kind of because at that point in your life, you're so far beyond the thoughts of like having children and all that kind of like it's not necessarily like in your mind, you know what I mean? If anything, you're like maybe thinking about your grandchildren.
But even like you read like Arthur C. Clarke's, like his later novels, like they get much more, although he was very hopeful in a lot of his stuff, but
yeah,
a lot of the time with writers, the older they get, the less cynical they get. Not that this is a cynical book or movie, they're actually like about hope, so I guess
I guess so.
They start very dark, but they're essentially about the importance of hope.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. It's kind of a dark topic or kind of way to think for someone when you're older, later in life.
Yeah, so I guess, like, what do you think the world in terms of realism or likelihood?
I love it.
First of all, one big question. Or, no, sorry, you had something else to... You were going to say something else, sorry.
No, go on, ask me the question.
So do you think that England would be the last functioning government if this was a global problem?
Not a chance. They're barely functioning now.
Like, exactly.
Before COVID. In that way, it has a lot of parallels to Beef Vendetta, I suppose, but that's a bit more fantastical, I suppose. Because it's like over the top, like dictator. It's just Nazi Germany in Beef Vendetta, anyway, in a lot of ways. This is much more realistic, that it's like all the, I can't remember the name of, Westminster, where like all the rich people live behind the wall, the gates, and they like have pet zebras and shit, and they're just like, it's all rich people and like soldiers who guard them and stuff, and it's just, they all just are living extravagant lives where they're just basically having like orgies and parties all the time, and eating the best foods. And I really liked all the whole idea of it. And then, like we were saying earlier, of how, you know, why would the government invest in like new cars or new buses or any of that kind of stuff? It's a kind of a pointless exercise, you know. But the world is so much more fucked for like those 18-year-olds when they're in their 50s and 60s. Like, will they even get that far? Will they just commit suicide beforehand? What I really like,
well, they'll have nobody to take care of them, kind of. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, what I really like about this movie is the depiction of the characters and like kind of how they talk and act. Like your woman who's the midwife doula kind of character, and totally like, where I'm getting at is, I think the fact that loads, like, there's a whole generation of people now in their like late 30s, early 40s who didn't become parents. They still kind of act a bit like they're 22. And I was 22 when this movie came out. And I will be the same age as Clive Owen's character in the year 2027. So I'll be 42, and he was 42 when he made the movie, or when the movie came out.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, I kind of relate to it a lot, because I think it's a story about our generation. It's a story about people our age. Like, all the characters are our age. They're just 7 years older than we are right now. And that's the thing I found I really related to. Like, I don't know. It just really worked for me. Even when it came out in 2006.
That's why his, like, Jasper, Michael Caine's character, who is best friends with Clive Owen, Clive Owen's character goes out to visit him regularly to just hang out and smoke weed with him. And Jasper, Michael Caine's character, like, he's kind of a prepper in a way, because he's, like, hidden. He's got, like, he has bushes to hide the path to his house that he moves to get down there and stuff. But Jasper talks about how Julian and Theo met at a protest.
Oh, yeah.
So considering the age they're meant to be before all this happened, that would have most likely been an Iraq war protest.
Ah, okay, very good. Yeah, yeah.
You were talking about the people that are still like perpetually 22, but they're all still like activists, and they're like want to bring down the government, and they all look like certain guys we went to college with.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're of that generation, that's what people, that was kind of like what that age group was like between like 1998 and 2002.
Yeah, exactly.
No, actually, maybe it wouldn't have been the Iraq war, they'd have been met pro, but you know what I mean? It'd have been that around that generation.
It was like the Bush era, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
It became a very popular way to be, which was to protest against, I suppose, the Bush era in a way, and like the war in Iraq and the all post 9/11 kind of war and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And like this film also was being shot just months after the London tube bombings, which is
crazy as well. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I do like that. It's a future of that generation.
Yeah, even though like the world has gone a completely different direction for us, and it's changed us then as a result. But then I was also thinking about it. It's like, so now as like the age I'm now, compared to say in 2006 when the movie was made, like me compared to my 22-year-old self then, comparing myself to how I'll be in 7 years' time, I'll probably be very much the same as I am now.
Yeah, I don't think you change. I think most of your development is done by like 25.
Yeah, exactly. Like I'm not.
You can still grow as a person forever.
Yeah, of course.
I think your fundamentals are probably much the same. Like how you would handle something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. How I react to scenarios and how I would. I suppose, negotiate myself through situations and the exact same.
Yeah. Now, in regards to the world, I do think that the version in the book is more like if this happened for real, where both men and women are infertile, let's blend both together. I think things go a bit more like, where people are just waiting for humanity's exit, rather than I don't think we see this dictatorship come into power and like there'd be rebels fighting in the street and rebel groups and all this, because I don't think anybody would care. Like why would you care? Why would you join a rebel group and fight for freedom when you're like we're going to achieve nothing because we're going to be dead in a few years anyway.
That was the big thing I didn't buy with the movie, is like they talk about how like the world has devolved into like war and famine and all that kind of stuff, and I was like, okay, there'd be some of that because people would just go batshit crazy. But,
well, there'd be famine certainly.
But I was kind of thinking like, I don't know how much if there would be exactly that kind of, because people just won't give a shit about anything anymore.
Yeah.
Because like all hope is gone, that there's no future for humanity. But then I suppose like how many people now, okay, not like think of like how many, say, politicians and CEOs are thinking about like how the world is going to be for the next generation now, or how many people on the street even think those things. You know, people are very selfish and think about themselves, so it's hard to figure out.
There isn't even going to be a next generation, so are they thinking about anything? I mean, there's no corporations anymore because they're not. There's nobody to sell anything to.
Yeah.
You know, the 18 to 34 demographic, which is the only demographic any marketing group cares about, they essentially won't exist in a few years. So, like, what's the point?
Yeah, see, like, you're looking at mass unemployment, but then you're looking at population decline as well. So it's kind of, would it balance out? But it wouldn't, because obviously it's like, you have to have like-for-like skills or industry and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's going to university. What's the point of going to university when there's nothing waiting for you afterwards?
I think the solution is to be like Jasper. It's like just living in the woods, listening to music and reading books and just waiting.
Smoking a ton of weed. Yeah, I think that's... But I think his character, he's probably the most realistic. I think a lot of people just do that. Theo is more like that in the book. And then like... You see, the thing with Theo's character is because he just doesn't care. He already had his loss before all this happened. So this doesn't really matter to him. Jasper is he was too old to have children anyway. And you know, his wife is in a vegetative state, I guess.
She's kind of catatonic. It's, I don't know, has it gone into more, is she a character in the book?
It's pretty much the same in the book, but she's not like just completely catatonic, but she's on her way out. Like, also the funny thing is Theo doesn't really like Jasper in the book.
Oh, really?
Jasper, his first visit out to Jasper in the book is because Jasper wants to come and move in to Theo's, because Theo has like a 5-story townhouse to himself. Right. And Theo, Jasper and the wife want to like move in, and like he'll pay him and they just like take a floor. Theo just like, I'll think about it, but like he doesn't, he's just like, oh no, I don't want to live with this guy.
They basically want him to look after them because they don't have kids.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think the reason they don't care about it so much, well, Jasper in the film and both of them in the book, is because they've already had their losses and stuff.
Yeah.
So they're better equipped to deal with it psychologically. Whereas everybody else, the big problem in the book is everybody's just gone fucking mad.
Yeah.
Like there's no, the dictatorship isn't as heavy on the surface, but like, you know, the way you've noticed that obviously in the film that like loads of people have pets as a replacement for kids. In the book, like, people fucking go and get their cats christened and shit and walk around with them in prams.
But they would,
absolutely, that is the most believable thing in the book.
Yeah,
there's some people have dolls that they walk around with, and there's really expensive ones that like are lifelike, and other people like will get jealous of them and try and steal it.
Oh, that's creepy.
It's
man.
Mental. It's real creepy. But it was that was the one part in the book where I'm like, that is absolutely what had happened.
Yeah, those like life dolls or whatever. Oh, that's so creepy.
When Theo first like he isn't kidnapped or anything in the book, somebody just like comes and asks him to meet with them in this church out in the country, and as he goes to meet with the group, he has to wait because there's a christening going on, and it's just like a bunch of weirdos getting their kittens christened and there's this big ceremony, and it's just a really bizarre scene, like, but I really liked it.
That's really funny. I think I need to read the book after
this. It is very good. I haven't finished it yet because it's actually, you know, the big problem with the book is it's about 300 pages. I think I'm only like 150 in, so I'm kind of only at the, like, plot's only kicking off for me. I've noticed, like, so a lot of time if I'm reading an old book, like, you know, a Moby Dick or that, you know, there'd be like maybe once or twice per chapter I might have to like take out my phone and click on the dictionary app. I have to do that like every second page with Children of Men.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's really well written. Like, I like it, but there's a lot of words I don't understand in it. I feel really dumb reading it.
Oh, no. I hate that. That's annoying.
And then, but it's worse because it's stuff where, like, I'm pretty sure I know what that means, but in this context, I think I must be wrong and you have to check it out.
Yeah.
It hurts your ego.
Yeah, that's fine.
But, you know, this is what, when a woman of, like, 80-odd writes a book, you know, she's had decades and decades of learning big words, so you don't need to feel too bad.
I've kind of been making my way through a lot of, like, older written novels and some Isaac Asimov stuff, and it's the same.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I haven't a clue half the fucking words are, like, the same. But you still follow it and understand it.
But it's just...
I'm like, oh, well, I wouldn't have used that word to describe that way.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, she's a good writer, so none of it's actually, you don't have to take out the dictionary. It's just a habit I have that I have to. But
yeah.
And it's completely pointless because I'll never actually remember the word, or I'll remember it, but then I'll just be like Russell Brand, where I'm just using big words that I've forgotten the meaning of.
I get what you mean. Like, if I was sitting reading a physical book, I would do that more. But lately I've been listening to a lot of audiobooks because I just find they're handy, in bed.
Yeah. You're not going to be checking
it. It's easier because you can sit in the dark and listen to a book.
This is why I should probably get an e-reader, like a Kindle.
I thought you were going to say this is why you should get a baby.
I've heard worse reasons.
Yeah. So, like that with an audiobook, like, if you hear an affluent word that you don't understand, like, you just kind of get on with it. Where, like, sit reading a book and be like, oh, what does that mean?
But at least if I had a Kindle, you can just, like, highlight the word and it'll give you the translate. If you have the dictionary installed, it'll give you the translation.
I know, I didn't know it could do that. So someone said that to me. It was probably you. I said that to me.
Maybe, yeah.
And I was like, no, wait, that's cool.
Yeah, it'd be a lot handier than, like, taking out my phone, unlocking it. You know, it's just, it only takes like 20 seconds, but when you're doing that every page of a P.D. James novel.
I kind of have this vision of you, like, sitting in bed, reading the book. You take the book, take out your bookmark, put it in, put it down, get out of bed, walk over to your bookshelf, get out the dictionary, flick through the pages. And then for some reason, you don't bring the dictionary back to bed with you. You put it back on the shelf, get back into bed.
I read another page.
Read another page, then you have to do it all over again.
Yeah, and maybe I should get another Google Home Assist just so as I can shout at it to tell me what a word means while I'm reading.
And then you mispronounce it and it's just like, I don't understand.
But where were we? Oh yeah, so people treating cats like babies.
Yeah, that's good. That's very realistic, like dogs and cats.
I mean, there are, it's kind of a cliche, but there are people who, you know, maybe were single too long, kind of fell out of the dating pool, aren't, pretty much have resigned themselves to the fact that they're not going to have kids and they just buy a bunch of cats. Like, that's a thing people do nowadays. So when the entire world knows that they're not going to have kids, I can see it's becoming a thing.
Yeah.
And there are people, like, there's people that treat their animals like children, even call them, like, they call themselves, like, a dog mom and stuff like that.
Oh, that freaks me out when people...
Yeah, it's really weird.
Or they say to their dog, like, does daddy's little boy want a snack? And it's kind of and you're like, don't do that. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that because you don't see any of that in the movie. That's absolutely rare.
No, you see that a lot of them have pets, but there's no real attention called to it.
Yeah. And obviously the virus is only affecting humans because there's still lots of animals. And actually, that was the thing I meant to ask you, because maybe I missed a throwaway line, but is it ever referenced why it's all the fields of burning cattle? Because you see that, like, there's a couple of shots in the movie where, like, they're just in a car and it goes by a field and you see smoke in the field, and then there's, like, a close-up of, like, burnt hooves in the field and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, these mass graves. But they never say why. And I'm assuming it's because all I could assume was it's the reduction in population, that the cattle farmers have too much cattle to feed people.
Yeah, that's what... But the funny thing is, I remember seeing this, like, back when we were in college, around that time anyway. And I remember noticing that and just it being like, what the hell's going on there? And not being able to figure out what it meant. But now rewatching it, I was like, oh, exactly what you said. And it's only because of what we saw with coronavirus, with them like dumping food, like burning food stockpiles. And remember, like, there was that story where like dairies had dumped something like, I don't know, it was something like 400,000 litres of milk down a drain, essentially.
Oh, yeah, because they couldn't transport it in time.
Yeah, well, because there's just, I think, because there was no demand for it or whatever.
Yeah.
But either way, it was only that, like, from reading stuff like that during coronavirus that I was like, oh, okay, so it's population so low that they don't actually have a use for these animals now.
That's all I could think it was. But then the irony being that, like, the population is, there's plenty of people in the world, but it's feeding British people. Like, that's the whole thing. It's all the immigrants and the asylum seekers and stuff who just are put in cages. And which is kind of, I don't know, I suppose immigration has always been a bit of a topic. Like, you could watch that movie anytime in the last 14 years since it came out and go, wow, that's really topical.
That was very topical for then too. It's in the book, but it's not a big point of it. But because the book was written in 1992 and it probably wouldn't have been as relevant then.
Yeah, there probably wasn't as much mass migration towards Northern Europe, I suppose.
Yeah, and you definitely weren't seeing people being put in cages and shit like that.
No.
A lot of the way the imagery of how they're treated in Children of Men reminds me more of, like, you know, the photos you saw from Guantanamo Bay and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think that was on anybody's mind back in 1992.
No, yeah, because they did the whole thing of, like, it skips ahead a bit, but when they're moving, when they're on the bus trying to get into is it Brighton, I think? And
yeah, I think so.
The soldiers get on the bus and just pick random people to take off and, like, put them on the ground with hoods over their heads. It's like, oh, they're just going to torch them and kill them. Why not?
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't seem to have a specific reason for taking them off the bus, apart from they just wanted to kill them. That was more, it was more reminiscent of, I suppose, the images of prisoners in Guantanamo and stuff, like the hoods over their heads and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like a weird combination of, like, World War II internment camps and Guantanamo Bay.
Exactly. Just to get back to, like, events from the film, we'll skip way ahead. Theo gets the papers and all. There's nothing really too eventful happening there. And he, we said the part that he has to transport her himself because he could only get papers for two.
Yeah.
And they, just as they're traveling in a car, him and the fishes, they get surrounded by a group, almost like a raider kind of group, we'll call them. And Julian, ends up being shot and killed.
Yeah.
And so pretty much it just falls on Theo to continue this journey. He's got no interest in it because he just doesn't care. He's checked out long ago. He doesn't give a fuck about anything. But then he finds out the key, the refugee girl, who is called Key, by the way, very subtle.
Yeah.
She's pregnant.
Dun, dun, dun.
And that just completely changes his... Which I think that's a great scene. She reveals that she's pregnant in a barn, and it's really, really on the nose religious imagery throughout this film, but that's probably the most, like, the pregnant woman with the, like, a messiah-like possible birth, I guess. She doesn't tell him she's pregnant. She just, like, strips off amongst the animals and shows her bump.
It's a bit of an odd way to tell someone, but...
And the words he says is, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And it's,
but completely, what I loved is that his character completely changes. He has no arc in this film. And I love that because he shouldn't. Because this is such, like, this would change anybody. Because I think I'd be like him in this book, or in the film. I'd probably be more like the Theo in the book, but where I just wouldn't give a shit. But then when you do see the other actually is a bit of hope, you completely change.
Oh, totally. And it makes complete sense.
And you would not give a fuck about your own well-being after that.
No.
Because he's not an action hero.
No.
Or anything, you know, he's kind of a loser in it. But he becomes quite badass because he doesn't give a shit now. He's like, this is bigger than anything ever. Like,
Well, that's it, exactly. And that's the thing, in that world, it is. It's everything. And
yeah.
So why wouldn't you? Like, absolutely anyone would do what he does in that story, I think, in that world.
Yeah, now, so also I'll just point out, because I didn't want to say it earlier because we kind of hadn't gotten to this part, but I think this is the main reason they changed it to women can't carry children in the film versus men can't, versus men's sperm being no good in the book.
Yeah.
Because in the film focuses very heavily on the pregnant woman being transported. That it's Julian that's pregnant in the book.
And oh,
it's
yeah,
not
yeah.
really the main plot. The main plot actually revolves around like the quietus in the book. Well, so far anyway, I'm only at halfway mark.
Yeah,
well, that's quite what they kind of, that's why he decides to help them in the book. He goes to, they want him to help him just talk to his, they don't want him to do anything other than get a meeting with his cousin / stepbrother.
Oh, okay.
And just ask him to stop, to change some of the things that are happening. That's all they want from him. And they send him to view one of the quietest ceremonies so as he can see what really happens. Yeah. And he sees that most of the people involved aren't actually willing.
Oh, it's like forced suicide.
Yeah, some of them are willing, but like people like back out and try to escape, and they're essentially just drowned.
Yeah.
And it's real horrible. But also, she's pregnant, and that becomes a thing. But where is it going with that? Oh, yeah. So anyway, in the film, if they kept that it was men that were infertile in the film, then like nobody would have as much of an interest in the pregnant woman. It'd be the man that whoever the father was would be who you would want to find.
Yeah.
And like it's not as, then it'd be Clive Owen transporting some dude who just has like magic sperm. You know, that's not as good of a, that's not as good of a story.
No.
What works in the book, because it's not, the book isn't about that story. That's just one thing that happens in the book. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, I guess that's pretty much the film. It's like, what do you do? It's more like, what do we do in that scenario? I guess like everybody does what Theo does, because do you even have a choice?
Yeah. And like there's some nice things in it where he's like, once he finds out, his whole thing is like, oh, go public, like tell the world, and like, why are you trying to like move her to somewhere else? Like, just embrace it. But it's a very open attitude to it. And then someone makes a great comment of, oh, they'll just get some like posh black woman to pretend it's her baby, because
they'll just find a black woman with a British accent,
because the mother, like Ki, is a Fuji. She's a non-national or whatever. I think that's a really interesting comment, because like his, even for all the shit that goes on, and like going by the train stations, there's cages of people, he still doesn't even think that way. So like, it really is like, when you're in it, you don't see it, kind of thing.
And that's the thing too. She's just going to become a tool for political parties, essentially. Because this is also, so pretty quickly we learn after Julian's killed, Theo and the fishes go to this farmhouse, and this is where Theo finds out she's pregnant. And then pretty soon another group show up, and it turns out that the group that attacked their car earlier was actually, there were plants. They were actually from within the group, the fishes, to because they didn't agree with Julian taking this girl to essentially the Fireflies from The Last of Us games. They wanted to keep her within their group because that would give them political power. And I found that interesting, because that is what happens with any big activist group throughout history. They just become another political party.
Yeah. And
it becomes about politics.
They end up becoming a government party.
And also, never trust the Krusty. Just saying. Because you know that guy, the guy that ends up, the guy that shoots Julian, he was the one that, he was with the group that kidnapped Theo at the start.
Yeah.
But you can visualize him now in your head, right?
I've
met a lot of people that look almost exactly like him in my life. Every time they turn out to be a complete scumbag. I'm sorry, yeah, I know that's going to, I know that might offend some people who might like have that look, but in my experience, people that look like that are usually bad news.
Like, yeah, I know what you mean. They're, they might act all political and for their cause, but then they're actually just a bit of a scumbag.
Yeah, yeah. They're the type of person that like overstays their welcome at a house party, and then at the end where it's just like there's only a handful of you left and you want to go to bed, but you're like, oh, a friend of mine's pretty drunk and I'm going to stay up because I really don't want to leave her in a room alone with this guy. You know, he's that kind of, he has that look to him. Because
yeah,
even when you hear him talking with the rest of the group, and we hear that he was involved with it, and Theo hears it too because he's hiding in another room, and we hear the guy go like, "Where's Farron? He's a bloody dead man," and he's belligerent, like he's been wronged because he was knocked off the bike by Farron when
shooting at him
for the car. Yeah, and you're like, you just killed his ex-wife. You're like it's the fact that he thinks he's the one being wronged. He's so sure of it. But he's a great, like, he has very little dialogue in the film, but he's a great character. He's a great villain for it because he's very realistic. I've met people like that.
Yeah, he's like on a revenge mission because he's been injusticed. But you attacked him in the first place.
Yeah, but it's just, he's that, like, no matter what ever happened in that guy's life, he's always going to think he's right. And that's like, there's a lot of people in those kind of like, there's a lot of those characters in extremist groups, and they're very dangerous because of that, because they can they will never be reasoned with.
Yeah, I know plenty of people like that, and I lived with a few people like that many years ago. Yeah, certain way of looking at the world. It's very strange. And why are they're always tight cunts as well.
Yeah.
They're always like the stingiest fucking bastards. Like, sort of thing of like, simple thing of like that you're at a party and everyone's like, oh, everyone's thrown in a fiver and we're going to get a couple of pizzas. They're like, oh, I won't eat any. That's fine.
Mm.
And then they'll eat like half a pizza when they arrive.
Yeah. They'll never bring anything with them to the party. They'll just scrounge.
They'll show up to a house party empty-handed and be like, oh, I didn't get a chance to get a drink. You haven't, the spare gone.
Yeah, they'll go around and just get like, they'll get like a bottle off everybody throughout the night.
Yeah,
and that's how they do everything. Like, yeah.
And they don't care the fact that like that they've no standards, to the fact that they'll have a can of cider, a can of beer, and then drink like some red wine. So they don't give a fuck, like.
Yeah.
Where we were talking earlier before recording, like, we were talking about like different beers or stuff of like, oh well, I prefer to drink this. they don't give a shit. Like,
no,
free drink is enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because they've spent so long doing that, they won't notice the difference anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's exactly. Yeah. That's why that's a really good character. He's in it so briefly, but you just, everybody knows exactly the person he is.
Yeah, everyone knows that guy.
And I do like, so later, like, doesn't matter if it's spoiling stuff, like, he dies later in the film. I know, like, it's really good that they didn't do this because it'd be too, like, cliched, but I still wished that it was Clive Owen that got to kill him.
I know, me too.
But I do appreciate they didn't go that route, because it just wouldn't happen that way, like.
I like that he's just shot by incoming fire in a battle, like, just almost like a background character at that point.
Not even sure if he does die, like, you just see him go down, like, but he could have just been hitting the shoulder.
Did you know it's Charlie Hunnam who plays him?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't realise that.
I forgot his name, but yeah.
I know, I spent the last 5 minutes trying to think of it. I didn't realise it was him when I was watching it.
Right. Yeah, no, I did, like, but maybe it might have took me a bit, like, it might have been like the second. I don't think when he first shows up kidnapping him, I don't think I clicked with me there. I think it wasn't until he actually came back when it's revealed that he was a plant, like.
Yeah.
Maybe something got to do with seeing him getting off a motorbike. It clicked. It's funny, he's good in some stuff, but like, he's a great actor when he's using his own accent, I think. And even though he does a convincing American accent, I think he just loses a lot of his acting chops or something when he's playing an American.
Yeah, his acting ability is lost in the diction of trying to pronounce the words.
Yeah. Away, so.
But I get how that's difficult to do.
Oh, no, of course. Yeah, yeah.
It's one of those things I don't really get why so many movies do that, where they'll get like an English or Australian person to play an American. It's like, just, especially when it's like an adaptation of something, and like, just change the character to be English, or, you know. He moved to America when he was 12 with his parents, so he still has an English accent. But you know what I mean? Like, just change it a little bit. Or yeah, get an American actor. Like,
I think a lot of the time it is just because, typically, like, let's be honest, no, don't take this as an insult to anybody, but like, British actors do tend to be better than actors from anywhere else, really.
Yeah.
Not always, but like, you like quite often, if you list off the best actors working today, if you were to do a top 10, I would say like 8 of them are probably British.
Yeah, probably actually. So, like, how realistic do you think a scenario like this is? Because it's one that's been in fiction for a while. Like, a Juggernaut is just a very good version of it. Like, I've seen it in TV shows and things that they did, like, full, like, people aren't having children anymore. And, trying to think, like, I've seen it in, I know they did an episode of Sliders.
Right, it's not actually something I've seen in a lot of other work. The only thing I remember seeing it in as well, so for listeners outside of Ireland, and most Irish people probably don't even remember this, but RTE, our national broadcaster, used to run this annual competition for, like, young filmmakers called Storyland, where you... You shoot a trailer for an idea for a show, and they commission a pilot for like 6 of them, and then every month the viewers vote on which ones to keep. So,
oh yeah, every
6
week.
I think it was month. You won't be shooting episode in a week. So you get 6 episodes for the first month, then it's down to 5, down to 4. So essentially only one show gets a full series. And one year there was one show. It was just Children of Men.
I forgot about this.
It was
just Children of Men.
Only it was like told from the pregnant woman's point of view, but it was the exact same. Okay, so we haven't really talked about the actual filmmaking of it.
Yeah.
But we just should. The fucking long takes are incredible.
Oh, it's unreal. And they do loads of invisible cuts and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Just smart editing.
And a lot of it is just one long take, too. Yeah. And it's the best use of it because you don't notice it.
No, you don't.
So many filmmakers do it just as a gimmick, and it's real noticeable.
Yeah.
Like, a perfect example is Daredevil does a really good one in the first season. Like, this long corridor fight scene.
Kevin Smith's one.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really good. But then because it was so good, they have to do it. The second episode of every season afterwards, they do the same one-shot take, and it becomes so obvious, and you're just like, oh, fuck off. Like,
yeah, you did it cool. Like, that was just one certain director, whatever, made that choice, and it was a really good choice. I just mean, it's like, that's what they do with the show now.
I still like when they do it, but it becomes like, this is a thing we do, and they try and, like, make it better each year. But because there's so many invisible edits, it actually becomes more obvious where they're cutting every time.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, you ruined it. When you draw attention to it, you ruin it. That's the key. Make it necessary to tell the story, not just to be a cool one shot. Like
there's a couple of, I'm trying to think, there's some older movie, does it? And they kind of do it well, and then every so often they do something mad where, like, the camera just pans into a wall for no reason.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think what movie it is.
One of the best, and it was done in it. What there was no invisible cuts. It was just one shot. They shot it twice, and then used the first one was in True Detective.
Oh yeah,
when Matthew McConaughey, when he becomes Rusty again or whatever his undercover character's name
is. Yeah, oh, that was deadly. Where it's like the police raid on the
like a compound or a ghetto or something.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah,
I forgot about
that. That's a really good one.
Man, that show was so different. The first season was so good.
The way it's done in Children of Men, and it's not just how it's shot, but a lot of it reminds me of the language of video games. Because like the one shots in this, it's all long shots over the shoulders of Clive Owen. And it actually feels like, almost actually, you know what feels like? The Last of Us. Because especially like when they're escaping the farmhouse, it's this really long take and we're following over his shoulders the entire time. And he's sneaking around outside and he even like, you know, he goes up and he takes like the carburetor out of one of the trucks.
Oh, I fucking love that. That was great. Like,
but that's real like a mission in a video game where you have to sneak behind the enemy and disarm them and shit. But even he's got a life bar in the film.
Yeah.
Because early in the film, after the cafe explosion, he has this ringing in his ear.
Oh, yeah.
And Julian says to him, you know that ringing in your ears? That's the sound of ear cells dying, like their swan song. Once it's gone, you'll never hear it again, so enjoy it. And throughout the film, that sound comes back every time something bad happens to him, essentially. We hear that ringing again, and it starts to fade.
Oh, I never noticed that. That's really subtle.
But it gets lighter each time.
But you're there with it. Like, yeah, that's really smart. Yeah. Like, I have to say, for the faults, like, there's a couple of faults here and there. Like, the biggest fault, as you're saying, is that so many people grieving.
Well, I don't think that's even a fault, because that's just, like, that's their, like, the writers believe that that's how people would be. So it's what they think the world would be like. I just don't agree with it, you know?
Yeah.
I guess it is a fault then, but yeah.
No, but, like, we've been very critical of the movie, like, started this conversation and we're talking like, oh, there's too many references to 1984, all that stuff. But I have to say,
it's an excellent great film. Movie. It's like,
I absolutely love this movie.
It's like one of the few sort of like legitimate masterpiece kind of films made in the last 20 years. Like, it can stand up against other sci-fis like 2001 and stuff like that. Even though it's not really a sci-fi, like, technically, it's dystopian hellhole film, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of years ago, we talked about it on the podcast when Zika virus was a big scare. We were like, oh, that's the closest thing to children of men.
Yeah.
Because it's like voluntarily not having children because people don't want to have kids Zika that have kids, this deformity.
Yeah. But then, like, who knows? Like, imagine it turns out like a side effect of coronavirus caused infertility.
Yeah, or no, not to be that guy or the vaccine.
Yeah. Well, at least you're safe. At least you've got one out of you now anyway.
Yeah.
Like, because I was thinking, like, is that, like, how do we sit? Like, how do you survive children of men? Do you just go out and get somebody pregnant? Like, I'm not giving that advice.
Start donating to a sperm bank.
But just to skip ahead to the end, just because, just for people that might not watch it, because it's just a really good scene. So Theo is going to, they've got this group of, like, the Humanist Project, and they're
or the Humanity Project.
But a scientific community that can help her and, like, try and figure out what makes her special, I guess, and they're going to take care of her. And there's, like, before Julian died, she arranged for the boat to meet them, so Theo just has to get her out to the boat, and they get stranded during this a war between the government's army and the rebels. And there's just a great moment where, like, the baby just starts crying and everybody just stops fighting.
Oh, it's fucking dead. It's so good.
Because they've just, like, the people who haven't heard a baby's cries in 18 years.
Yeah.
And, like, it's both sides. Like, the military are invading the compound or the building, and they're about to, like, they see Theo and they're about to just shoot him, and then they see the baby. And then everybody just shouts, ceasefire! And they let them out. Nobody tries to interfere. Like, a lot of people just, like, gently, like, touch the child's feet as they pass by. And it's just brilliant because
there's a great shot in that when they're going down the stairs and they're going past the soldiers. And one of the soldiers just does that thing where, like, he just stands and stares at the baby and then, like, breaks his eye contact. You know, like, he's never seen a baby before. because he's like 24. Like, it's just not something. And he's just, you know when like people really rudely stare because it's something they haven't seen. Like, they don't know what else to do. They stare at you like a 4-year-old. Like, and it's just a really great moment. Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, and then like they're just about get to safety.
Yeah.
And then one of the rebels fires a rocket launcher at the military and the fighting just starts back up again. And I like that they did, because it would have been a bit too unbelievable if they just decided to stop fighting each other because they saw a baby. But it wasn't that they were like, oh, there's a baby, everything, the future has, we have some hope now. It was, they just never saw a baby before, so nobody was interested in fighting for a few minutes, and then once the baby was out of view, they just went back to fighting.
Really cool thing about that is, I know that's, I read a thing where the director described as he wanted the end of his movie to be the beginning of the story, and I was kind of thinking, like, so, like, that scene where there's this big battle and then everyone stops because there's a baby. And then in that world, how much of that would just become, like, an urban legend?
Yeah.
Like, no, like, so how many people are going to survive that battle? And then of those people, like, oh, yeah, I saw a baby. Like, how many of them actually saw the baby? And, then, like, it would just become this like, whole urban legend of, like, there was a baby.
Yeah.
I know there's other babies in the world. And stuff. It would just, but it would essentially have no meaning,
yeah. So. Yeah, but also I think very few of them survive because at the very end we do see like 3 bomber planes go in and it looks like they fucked.
I'd forgotten that, yes. Sorry, I had forgotten about that.
It looks like they nuked a place.
Yeah, they just firebomb it, like even taking out their own soldiers.
That didn't. I completely forgot about that until rewatching it. I'd never thought that happened at the end.
Yeah, I totally forgot about it.
Like, to the point I was even thinking watching that, is that even the British government? That almost looks like that's an invasion from another country at the end.
I know what you mean.
Like, because as well, like, yeah, they just clearly took out all their own troops in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And why would they even do that? Like, I don't even understand, like, because there's weird stuff, like, why is the government's armed forces even fighting these people?
Why would they care? I don't...
Yeah, it's bizarre, but like, and I don't mean that as in why would they do it, as in that's a plot hole in the film or anything.
No, no.
Yeah. I just mean like in that world, the why anybody wants to do that is just, would just be beyond me, but I'm sure they would. Part of me feels like, is it to keep people busy almost? Like the war is like, was such a normal part of that society that they always kind of had to be fighting somebody for things to seem somewhat normal? I don't know.
That's a really good perspective. It's like, or is it just busy work? Like the whole fight against immigration, is it just, because think of how much...
To have somebody to blame.
Busy work that creates. Yeah, yeah. Like, that creates so many jobs.
Like 1984, where they actually are involved in a fake war with a continent that might not even be real.
Yeah, who's either their ally or their enemy?
Depending on what year it is, like.
I love that a country that might not even exist. That's gross. I never thought of that way. Actually, imagine anything.
And do you think with the ending of Children of Men, do you think that the Human Project they're just another fishes? Are they just going to make her part of their own political agenda, or are they, do you think they're probably an actual neutral force for good?
Absolutely, they're totally things for their own agenda.
I'd like to think that the fact that Julianne Moore's character didn't trust her own group but trusted these, that they're probably the best option.
I suppose, they're definitely the best option in that world, like of the options that he and Theo had, that was definitely they took the absolute right course. Like,
yeah, well, like the Fireflies in The Last of Us, where they were going to kill Ellie, but they were doing it for what they saw as the greater good,
even if they were kind of wrong.
Kind
of perception in the first one.
Yeah.
Is that they kind of didn't even know it was going to work. It's totally experimental surgery. There's no potential that they would actually lead to a cure.
But at least with this, there's no like they just know she can conceive children, and like the assumption would be that like children born from her are probably the same. Like they don't, so like she's pretty safe because like they can't kill her or her child. They need them alive. So
in the book, is there a cause as to why the infertility exists?
No, there is mention of different like pandemics and stuff, but not as of yet, there is no cause.
Oh, okay.
I think it's actually more implied in the film because they mentioned the flu pandemic in the film that killed Theo and Julian's son.
Oh, yeah.
But whereas in the book, their kid dies just in an accident, so.
Yeah.
But they do mention that there was like the spread of disease and stuff, but whether that's linked with it or not, I'm not sure.
I think, again, it's also one of my favorite scenes. It's just the description of the ladies, the midwife, and she's talking about how it happened.
When they started noticing more stillbirths and then...
And miscarriages, and then looking at her bookings ahead, she had none.
Yeah, just one day she looked at her bookings and there was none.
And I was just like, oh, that's crazy. Cause like,
and then she rang a colleague.
Yeah.
And she had the same. And then she rang her sister, who was a midwife in like Sydney.
Yeah.
And she had the same.
Oh, like that.
Yeah, that's a great story the way it's told.
It's absolutely brilliant. And it just really brings you into like, what would that world be like that you wouldn't... How long would it take you to realize, like, as a society, how long would it take us to realize that it's, like, it's too late already? You know what I mean? Because you would suddenly just, even if it was never, like, discovered like that by whatever, it's such a slow burn kind of thing. Even though you'd all know within, say, a year or two, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Within that year or two, it wouldn't be obvious that that's what's happening, even though it clearly would be, but you just wouldn't notice.
Well, you take like with coronavirus, like how long it took them to kind of notice the similarities between people showing up with the same symptoms and stuff like this. Then you compare that to like, well, pregnancies, you just lived with one for however long it takes, 9 months, I guess. But that's like, but what I was getting, like how long before... Like so how long before you're advised to like tell people? You know, when you find out you're pregnant, the doctors usually say...
It's 12, you have a 12-week scan, so 3 months is kind of...
Okay, right.
Months, and then generally you tell people after 12-week scan, because if that's good, then it's like the chances of anything going wrong after that are very low. Like it's obviously it still happens, but it's it's considered it's safe to tell people after 12 weeks.
So that's what I was getting. So for any like major problems that could have, I assume then that you could have typically happen when the first 3 months then.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're talking at least like if everybody in the world, like there's a 3 month period either way. Like if some virus was going to cause this infertility, there'd be a 3 month, it'd say it just hit today and it just infected everybody at the same time. It'd be three months before we really start to notice.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a mind-blowing statistic that tremors between 1 in 3 and 1 in 4 pregnancies fail.
I've heard that before, actually, yeah.
So on average, if you're pregnant 4 times, like obviously that's not what's going to happen, but potentially you'll have 1 miscarriage. It's so common. It's one of those things. It's really, really common, and and most of them are within that 3 months.
Because it's not talked about when it does happen to people.
No one talks about it.
Nobody talks about it, and then when it does happen to somebody, they feel like there's a problem with them because this thing happened to them. But it's something that should be talked about more and accepted that like this unfortunately can just happen to and. It's very possible this will happen to a lot of people that it shouldn't be kept as quiet as it is for some reason. Uh-huh.
But the reason is because it happens within that time that you wouldn't necessarily tell someone. So like so you and your partner, you could find out you're pregnant, and then 2 weeks later you're not feeling well, or you know, you have a heavy period, and then just gone. Like, and so you kind of, people don't tell people, and then they just deal with it.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's, they go to the doctor, but generally at that stage, so you're fine. Like, you don't need any intervention from doctors at that stage. It's literally just a couple of cells or whatever. So it's just really common. People just don't talk about it. So
yeah. That's exactly. It's a very dark way too, because wrapping up, that's a dark ending.
Yeah, it's a dark, dark world with them.
It's quite a hopeful world too, though. That
yeah, it is. That's it. Like the end of the movie is, it's all about hope. It's all about like, there is hope. There is a future.
You know, the novel is considered a Christian book.
Oh, really?
I don't think the writer really considers it.
Oh, okay. But, yeah.
Well, I think the movie is too, and I think actually the movie probably more so, because like, they actually added religious imagery throughout it.
Yeah.
So, do we survive Children of Men? Well, like, I mean, everybody survives it, but... you know, would you want to? Unless there's hope, unless you're you have a pregnant woman that you can save... you would just be sitting around smoking weed with Michael Caine, which wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
This is another one of those, like, every so often we come across like a film or a book or something where we go, I would do exactly what the characters in this movie did.
Well, with this one, I think anybody would.
But that's what I was going to say, is like, that's the thing about this story, is it's like, anyone would do that. Like, anyone would act like Theo does if he's in that position. And I get, hey, then there's characters who would act like the fishes who wanted it for political gain, or, you know, like, obviously. But I think the majority of people would act like Theo does.
Yeah, now, the majority of people might not be like Theo in the beginning, where he's so resigned to not really caring anyway. Whereas I think there'd be a lot more people that would just be, well, like the people that are getting their kittens christened and shit, where they just can't deal with the world.
Yeah.
And they might be less suitable to actually then help when they finally have the chance.
Oh, like, yeah, you literally wouldn't have, like, the mental ability to help, essentially. You just wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah, exactly. Though I think a lot of people would be like the woman, the refugee woman that sort of gives them the place to stay.
Yeah.
Or once she sees that there's a baby, she's, like, all in trying to help as well.
Oh, that's a great moment where she goes through the door and he's like, my baby, where are you? She's like, well, I'm here.
Yeah, she thinks she's going to steal the baby. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think most people would, if they saw this, saw that she was pregnant, that they would just, instinct would kick in.
Like, very likely scenario within that world, you know, you don't see it in the movie, but, like, you're sitting at home, you're watching TV, and then someone knocks on your door and they have a baby and they're like, help. You would just let them into your house.
Well,
in that world.
Might not, but
no, in that world.
Oh, in that world. Sorry. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Not in our current world, though, because you'd know it's...
Well, a lot of people would because, you know, people see a baby and they think that's... Yeah.
But in that world, you'd just be like, yep.
But, so everybody survives this to an extent. It's a different kind of scenario. I think everybody acts like Theo.
Yeah.
We're not going to have to face this situation. Not, well, hopefully not anyway.
No, they're not.
I mean, you're not anyway. At least you're in the clear for now anyway. Unless you do. Do you plan to have more? Like, is that you a one and done kind of guy?
No, I'd like to have maybe one or two more. But
okay.
I'm just trying to convince my wife about that. We've got one. That's a lot of work. So.
Yeah.
Like, loads of people say, like, oh yeah, you kind of forget how tired you are, and you forget how much work it is. Don't worry, in a year or two, you'll be like, oh, let's have another one. We're still in that moment of, like, we're never doing this again.
Yeah, but the one you have now will take care of the other one, so...
It all really works that way, not when they're tiny and starving and screaming.
Ah, no, I think it does. I think it does. No, I think I know a thing or two about this shit.
Yeah.
I think that's how it works. And then you get a cat to take care of the other one. And
put it this way. Put it this way, right? I would love more kids, but I don't know if I want to have a tiny baby ever again. Because it's so much fucking work and I'm so tired.
Yeah. Just do a Bradgelina or whatever they were called on it.
Yeah, I'd be very happy
to start going like over
a 4-year-old, a 3 or 4-year-old, and just like that they're potty drained and give them food and they'll eat. Well, you might argue with them over the food, but you know what I mean? Like they can feed themselves and they can actually dress themselves to a point, but then you can train them to do things your way, your family traditions.
I've often thought, because I don't want kids at all, like no interest in it for me, but I have often thought, like, I wouldn't mind, and I'm probably close now to the age where this might become a possibility. I wouldn't mind if someday an 18-year-old shows up at my door and it's just like, Dad,
that'd be great.
And I can just go drinking with them. Like that I'd be okay with. But
that'd be good.
Like, where all the work's already done.
That's such a man.
That's just a lazy thing.
I know what I think I'd do is I do a test, right? So like I have a baby and she's gonna grow into a child and all that. But what I would do is, if I want another one, is I'd maybe like audition them, try them out, and like they have to be able to go to the fridge, get my beer out of the fridge and bring it to me. I don't want them any younger than that. And I'll like foster them or adopt them or whatever. Once they can do that, that's fine.
That's a good dream to have.
That's the requirement. Though you can train a dog to do that, so maybe I'll just get a dog.
Just as good as a man who has a child. It's like you might as well just have a dog. I mean, to be honest, like, I've tried very hard to train a dog to do that and I've had very little success, so I think you're on a better course.
Yeah, that's true. I know kids are great. Like, I've loads of nieces and nephews and stuff, and they're just great. Like, they're so much fun.
Yeah, but that's what I like where I'm okay with like being the fun uncle or the your dad's friend that calls over, but like I just don't want to do any of the work, you know.
Oh yeah, so you're gonna be fun Uncle Johnny, is that your plan?
Yeah. Well, it's not a plan, but like it's my preference anyway.
I'd love that if you got that knock at your door.
Yeah, I think it'd be. It'd be a few years now before it could. Well, even then, no. I think it realistically it'd have to actually be. Because I've had like I'm trying to think. I'm pretty sure if I got like long-term girlfriends pregnant, I'd know about it. Like it'd have to be
like, well, basically, yeah. You'd be like, you were 16, 18 years ago, so like you definitely know you didn't get the girl you were with when you were 16 pregnant, because you probably still know her.
Well, that's what I'm saying, yeah. And I've been in a long-term, like it'd have to be, I if it was to happen, I'd be like 40 before it could happen, I'd say.
Yeah.
Or maybe not, but anyway, thing is, it's probably not going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
Do you have to pay child support after they're 18?
Yeah, does it accumulate back then?
Oh, Jesus. Well, then, like, strike everything I just said.
No, you might get the Yomi 18 birthday and Christmas presents shtick and just buy them a car.
No, I go back on everything I said. That's still too much. So I think we have to wrap it up there.
Yeah, definitely.
Mainly because I really need to use the bathroom and it's very late.
That's fair enough.
But until next time. Oh, that's a bad sign off to just say that. Look, hope you liked the episode, everyone. Give us a rating, review, follow us on Twitter, come to Discord, links in the description. Anything else to add?
There's always hope.
Yeah, and if in doubt, go knock somebody up. and have a nice apocalypse.
Stay safe, and sometimes don't be prepared.
Perfect.